This is Channel 253 Sports.
But there's so much talent and there's so much of a good foundation that it was only a matter of time. And you saw it within the CCL tournament, and you will see it in the next third of the tournament in MLS.
In 2004, 30 years after the birth of the Seattle Sounders, a crack podcasting unit was sent to prison by a federal court for a crime they didn't commit. These men and women promptly, well, eventually, escaped from a minimum security luxury prison camp to the Tacoma Underground. Today, still wanted by the Timbers Army for dropping trow in front of Jeltwin, they survive as supporters of Fortune. If you need a hot take, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the Flounders B Team.
Hey, everybody, this is Steve, and you're listening to the Flounders B Team podcast. That's right, we're back. Like, just a couple of weeks since the last one, just a couple of weeks since the one before that, we might be starting a pattern and a trend here again. So really excited to have you here listening with us, and also in studio on the Zoom, however you want to call it. We have our perennial co-host, Mr. Tim Hamilton. How you doing, buddy?
Good evening or morning or wherever you, whatever time it is when you're taking this in. Hi.
Podcasts are a time shifting platform. That is absolutely true, man. Okay. And of course, we have our very special guest today, Sounder at Heart contributor, and some other platforms he's continually working on. Of course, Nico Moreno, scout reporter extraordinaire, and friend of pod, of course. Really happy to have you back on this year, Nico, for the first time.
Hey, no, excited to be back. It's been a while. You know, it's a couple of years since I've been on, maybe one or so. I can't remember, but between the pandemic and everything that's gone on with the planet, I think this is the first time I've been back for a while. So excited, you know, lots to talk about. Our Sounders have definitely had a fantastic year. They've made more than just noise. They brought some titles home. So, you know, it's been an exciting year. So happy to talk to you guys and talk to your audience and you guys whatever I got.
Has it been two trophies since we saw you last? It was our last show in that bar in Tequila?
I believe it was. Right before the final.
You were training for some sort of, was it the press match or something?
You're right. Wow, it has been that long.
Yeah, Andrew Hammond was still in town.
Two titles, definitely two titles before. That's how long I've been gone.
It's been a long time. My God. Well, we're really happy to have you back on. You got the opportunity to travel with the team for CONCACAF Champions League first leg of the final in Mexico City. Yeah.
Yes. That was an amazing experience overall. From, you know, being able to experience the culture to the stadium, the fans, watching a great game. I have to say that it's probably one of the best experiences I've had in since I joined media, over the last 10 years. I thought that, sharing it with Jeremiah was also great, you know, another Sounder at Heart. Great, you know, everybody knows Jeremiah, so mm-hmm. No plugins, but it was just fun. It was great to just be there. The team was very helpful with allowing us to talk to all the players and getting a lot of content for, you know, everybody to see. But if I had to just kind of put it all together in one, it'd be just how global and marketable the Sounders have become, you know, talking to Mexican fans and those around the facilities. The name of the Seattle Sounders are really coming out. And that's something that perhaps for some might not be surprising, but if you talk to people outside of the States, the names that you usually hear from, you know, whether it's South Americans or Mexicans or whatever, are the LA Galaxy and LAFC, New York City FC, things like that. And by hearing people talk about the city and the stadium, and, you know, most of them didn't really know about the change of the name of the stadium, but they knew what it was about and the noise and the culture. So it was really cool to see that. And then in general, you know, being at another stadium and seeing how that is felt by that specific group of people. There were kids that were like 7, 8 years old booing at the Seattle Sounders starting 11. I mean, it was great. It was a really cool experience.
Yeah, I'm always curious to see, you know, what the actual reach is. You know, here we kind of had to introduce CONCACAF champions to just the public in general, to soccer fans somewhat, because soccer fans are sort of introduced to, if anybody watches any of the European leagues, there's always multiple multiple competitions during the season. Not everybody knows which ones is midweek. You know, if you're a Manchester or Liverpool fan, you're like, well, I know they're playing midweek, but I don't know if this is Carabao or if this is the FA or if this is Champions. Or it's fun to be able to participate in something like that. I mean, it's a lot of miles on the players, but did you feel that everyone when you were in Mexico was on top of the Champions League and kind of figuring out where they were and what they needed for to feel comfortable going into Seattle and the return leg?
Yeah, that's a good question. And honestly, at first I didn't feel like that was the case. Mexico City is so huge. I mean, it's so big. It's almost intimidating how big it is. So when I was first there and I was asking, you know, the cab driver, my Uber driver, you know, the guy making the tacos away from that area where the stadium's at, a lot of people didn't really know about the game or the significance of the final. And I initially started thinking, wow, maybe people are not really into CCL. Maybe they don't really know about it. And I was a little bit disappointed. And then as the day got farther out, and I got there the day before. So when I went to training the day prior, which was more of a very light training for the Sounders, I started seeing more and more people around that stadium and people talking more about it. Mm-hmm. And then the day of the game, that was when everything just blew up. Perhaps there wasn't a lot of noise in radio, in the TVs or anything like that. But hours before, when we started getting to the stadium, that place was packed. And Pumas is a very interesting demographic of fans because they're a university. So it was a good, lively crowd. And, you know, there were families and stuff, but a little bit of a college feel, like a college football tailgating. Regardless of the rain, people were just having a good time in the parking lot. So yes, I think that because of how big the city was, maybe there wasn't as much noise as you might hear in other cities. But when it came down to it, that area, that fan base really showed up. They had a whole like serenading fan base to the Pumas guys in their own hotel, because although they're in the city, they had like their own little hotel to just kind of keep the team together. And they were serenaded by the fans. I mean, it really came up big. You could definitely feel that passion. And so many of the fans were already getting tickets for the next game. Even prior to the result, we talked to quite a few people that were already ready to go ahead and go to Seattle, a couple of media members as well that we spoke to. So I started really feeling that this did mean a lot for this specific fan base. And the reason why it wasn't so broad across the city was because of the size of it and because that city shares a couple of other fan bases, America, Cruz Azul, and they all hate Pumas. So maybe some cared, and those who did care just wanted them to lose. So it was a little bit of both.
I was going to ask you about that. Do you consider the Pumas to be probably one of the smaller of the Cuatro Grandes?
Oof, that's another good question. That's tough. That's tough because of the late trend that Cruz Azul has had. America is always going to be bigger, in my opinion. Chivas is always going to be bigger because of that nationalism, that Mexican pride of a team that only plays with Mexican nationals. So perhaps, yeah, I think that they could be a little bit below Cruz Azul just because of the last trend, how relevant they've stayed as of recent. Because honestly, Pumas had not been a title contender for quite a while. They've had a lot of issues with their own coaching and things like that. They've actually just started putting it together this year. So, yeah, I would think that they are probably the smaller out of the big four, big five in Mexico.
Did you have access to the locker room before the match?
Yeah. We definitely had the before and the after.
What was it like walking in there, and how did everybody feel in that first leg, just getting ready to fight on enemy territory, and what was the mood like in the locker room?
They were extremely motivated, man. Yeah. I mean, the facilities were not what you see here in the States. So there was some sort of adaptation. The whole stadium was very different. The tunnels going into the locker rooms were crammed. And, you know, even I felt kind of tall, how small things were. The team did a really good job at focusing at the task at hand and at everything else around them. Everybody in the team was extremely focused. Nicolás Sodero was on point the entire time that they were there. Raúl Ruidíaz told us prior to that game that this was the biggest tournament of his career. And I think that's what everybody felt. It was a moment that they were not going to just let go past them without giving their very best. So between the locker room feel and that camaraderie that's so important, I haven't seen a group with that same cohesiveness in the mental state of mind than that moment. You know, it's very easy for right before a game for guys to have a different thought process on how they approach it. But I think it was very even across the whole group, the significance of that moment. And I think that really came out in how the game played out when Seattle found themselves against the ropes and you know, things didn't seem that they were going to go their way. They really hit that extra gear. They really dig in deep, and they were the team that was resilient because it was a group put together with one objective and one mental state. And Christian Roldan and the way he handled the game, he gave it that Roldan special where he's just all over the field. He's covering space. Mm. He's, you know, getting fouled in the box. So because of that mental state that we saw prior to that game, you knew that no matter what was going to happen in those 90 minutes at Ciudad de Efe, this team was going to go out with a bang. And they did. It was a hostile environment. Mm-hmm. It was a huge, wonderful crowd. You got to say it. I mean, it wasn't close to the 69 we had here, but it felt like 70. I mean, the amount of noise that they were creating was incredible. So to your question, and I'm bringing all this into context because you could see that before the game. You could feel it in that locker room. And then right after that, the accomplishment was felt in the grin in Brian Smesser as he walked into the press conference room at that stadium. And then as we walk in with the team in the tunnels, you know, eating some of their pizza right before we do some interviews, and how happy the team was because they really did a huge gesture by tying that game up the way they did, with you know, Nicolás Sodero that even got into it with quite a few of the players because they were mad that they were able to just get that game back regardless of the circumstances. So it was awesome to see it. You could definitely feel that unity within the team before and after the game.
Someone had mentioned that a lot of the shenanigans at the end of the match was to try to extend some of the bookings that will roll into the final. Like now, the goalkeeper obviously was doing his part to try to get into Lodero's head, and then Lodero dispatched the penalties, and then it just seemed to like, you're talking trash, but then he puts it away. And I'm not close enough to hear any responses, but I mean, he seems like he should probably just keep it down and not give anybody more motivation. I don't know if that seems to work. I don't know. were you, we didn't, from our vantage point, get to see a whole lot of what happened after the match. Were you able to see the dust up, and do you have any notes or any light to shine on?
No, I think it was just very real. It started on the field. It started with Talavera and him being this persona that was really making it a hostile environment. And that did not go well with the Sounders attackers, primarily Raul Ruiz Diaz and Nico. I mean, they were getting chirped at the entire game.
Oh, yeah.
And you could see it. I mean, it was just a physical game where the ref, I think in the first 15 minutes, he really allowed that game to get really physical very quickly. And that just ignited a fire within everybody. So when Pumas gets ahead and they feel like they're home free and they're probably continue to instigate the Seattle Sounders players. And you know, Raul, he was being very physical, maybe a little late to some of those duels against the keeper. So it was just kind of a buildup. Once they score and once Nicolas Guerrero puts away that first PK and he gives Talavera a couple of words that I probably can't say what they mean here, you knew that it was just going to spark it. And Talavera is yelling at him and, you know, Nico is trying to hype up the crowd. So when that second goal goes in and Nico, in a moment of euphoria, kind of is, you know, doing that little number with your hands by your ears, yeah, asking the crowd, what's
can
up?
Can you hear me now?
I hear you.
And he really delayed that celebration. He used it to put under his shirt because he was obviously celebrating that he was going to have a baby. And that took a while. And I actually thought that he could have got a yellow card because he even goes and gets a ball from one of the ball boys and uses that to kind of put under his shirt. And he takes a couple of minutes for the game to restart after that. So I think that really got under the Pumas players, you know, minds. And that's when at the end of the game ends up kind of exploding because of how that end of the game happens.
Yeah, I think watching, you're right. Going through my memory, after that first penalty, they didn't give the ball back. Nico wasn't going to try to wrestle it out of the guy's hand. So he just kind of like, all right, fine, I'll just go get this one. And then he shoves it under his shirt, like you said. Yeah, and then we, in stoppage time, with all the late game, you know, just trying to delay, and I'm glad we got that second penalty too. So the dust up after the match, like I was saying, it sounded like they were still trying to get people sent off or second yellows. Is that a fair assumption, or am I just kind of reaching for something that wasn't there?
No, I mean, that could have been the strategy, but I just thought that it was just a big rivalry game that it fell to that point, that it was just a game that, because of how it happened, how things came up, there were just bad vibes between the players and the Sounders having experienced players that know how to use that to their advantage. They really got under certain players' skins, and that's why it all happened. Were they trying to maybe affect the next game, knowing that Mosso came off with an injury and that, oh, you know, yeah, they had a couple of guys that were probably not going to be in the second game? Yep, I wouldn't put it past them. But I think that not so much of a strategy. It was more of a reaction to an action after a really tough, grinding game.
Yeah, being up 2-0, we know what that's like, and then have somebody come back and take it from you. What was the locker room like at the end? Did it feel like a win, even though it was a 2-2 draw? Do you know, going into the away match, if we had any results in mind that we were willing to settle for, or we were just trying to get home and keep it close?
Look, I'm sure everybody in that locker room wanted a win, but it certainly felt like a win. I'll say it again. When you were walking towards that locker room, you could hear the guys talking about it. You could hear, you know, guys high-fiving and just talking about that nice little feud that happened. And the way the whole team had Nico back, I think that was huge. And Brian talked about it. You know, he liked to see the team protect their guy. And I think that might have backfired on Pumas if that was the intent, was to rattle them or to get some yellows. I think that really unified the team more than they were even prior to that game. So it absolutely felt like a win because of how they did it, where they did it, and in the fashion that they did it. It definitely was a win in terms of that emotion and that atmosphere in the locker room. Yes, that's the way it felt. It wasn't a win. I'm sure they all wanted one, but the way it came up, it was definitely a feel of a big win.
As a journo, do you feel like you were there? There's a lot of stuff that happened this year in the stands that I'm sure a lot of people aren't proud of. Did you feel at all in danger of any kind being, you know, behind enemy lines, so to speak?
No, not at all. I mean, that's one thing that, you know, me and Jeremiah got really, were really fortunate to experience. The press box was literally with the fans. I mean, it was not a press box like you see here. It was just, you know, four concrete walls that looked more like a hockey penalty box without the glass, and you're next to the fans. I mean, I had a guy that was, you know, drunk and making out with his girlfriend, like rubbing on my shoulder half a day. That's how close you were to everybody else, right? And in front of us, you had people unfortunately smoking or eating and drinking. So it was definitely that close. I mean, it was a personal experience with the fans. And I got to tell you that not once did I feel in danger. Nobody was rude or anything even close to that. And yes, I didn't have any Sounders gear on me because I was, you know, going there as a journalist. Mm-hmm. But even when we left the game and we were walking towards the Uber ride with Keith, who does the call in TV for the Sounders, he had a Sounders logo. And perhaps for maybe a couple of bad looks and somebody maybe rolling down the window and saying some curse word maybe one time, nothing else happened. Nobody approached us. I never felt in any way in danger. Quite the opposite. Everybody was very nice, very polite, including the media members that covered the team in general. It was a really peaceful experience from that perspective.
I'm pretty sure that that was because Pumas is more of a family friendly environment, or do you think that you would be treated just as well at, I don't know, any of the other away matches if you were to
Azteca?
I can't really say because when I was preparing for this game, I have a lot of friends in Mexico and they were like, hey, you got to watch out that, yeah, you know, you don't put your Sounders gear because Pumas fans are really rough and stuff. But then I would hear friends of mine that cover Pumas and be like, oh no, when you go to Azteca, that's when you really feel it. So I think it's just everybody pointing the finger at the next group of people or at the Nukes group of fans. Yeah. But yeah, so I can't really comment on whether it was that in particular, but it did feel very family friendly. Like I said, I mean, it was a Wednesday at 9 p.m. local time. Yeah, and, man, you know, there were kids, there were families. I mean, it really did feel like a all age event. So never was there a hostile environment with anybody in that stadium. So in that regard, I got to say that it was a good experience. And I couldn't really say if it was just because it's Pumas or because we just got lucky or it was a good game. Because it was an international game and not a rivalry. Right. Maybe if it's in America, Pumas, maybe things are a little different. But because it was an international game, maybe it just didn't feel like that. I will say the police presence was huge. I mean, there were like 12 buses of police officers. There was a squadron of like 50 police officers in horses. There was guys in tactical gear. I mean, it was well protected. I mean, they had a big police presence there, maybe just in case, but it was cool.
So we did end up winning. We drew that one after, you know, two penalties in the second half, including one in the 99th minute at the death, after a ton of stoppage time and just ridiculousness. But we ended up winning the second leg 3-0 for aggregate 5-2 win, which was absolutely phenomenal. One of the dark sides of that, of course, we've talked about on the show is João Paulo. Having that basically season ending injury in what, the 26th minute of that first match or that second match. So that transitions pretty well into your area of expertise, which is kind of scouting, replacement, and that sort of thing. We know that Coach Metzger, Garth Lagerwey have said, yeah, we're not replacing João Paulo. We fully expect him to be back. If not towards the end of this season, then at the beginning of next season. So we're interested in your perspective on the Sounders' short-term needs and what they'll be looking for, especially coming into the summer window.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I have no doubt, and everything that we're hearing, reading between the lines, plus the information that I've been able to gather, I can't say that the team is looking for a replacement for JP.
No.
Not even another player to bring in as depth. And I see why, right? I mean, you have three young guys that are battling for that position in Obed, Leyva, and Josh Atencio. You have a veteran and a master of all trades in Kellen Rowe, who has done well at that position. If you really needed a guy that has done it and succeeded in that position and is one of the most influential players in the team, would be Christian Roldan being moved to that central position. Mm-hmm. But I think because of Albert Rusnak's leadership, tactical abilities, and the way he's engaged and really filled in for João Paulo, the team feels comfortable enough with him being that leader in that position and allowing one of these young guys to grow, develop, and continue to, you know, play for that position. So you got to give credit to Rusnak, and that's why I bring him into the conversation, because his ability to distribute from the back line, his ability to hold defensive assignments, his soccer IQ, he just has been a very influential player. And I think that without a guy like him in that holding mid position, Seattle would probably be looking for another guy. Had he just been a guy that you brought in and he could only play 10 or he could only play on the creative end of that formation, they'd probably be struggling. But because he's been so good and he's been such a smooth transition, and he's gained the confidence of the, not just the managerial staff, right? Not just Schmetzer and Freddie and everybody's confidence, but it's also the team. Every player feels very comfortable with him at that position. So because of that, yes, I don't think the team is looking for that specific position. What I will say is that there's a couple of needs that I think need to be addressed. One of them, winger. I think there is a lack of depth. I get that we have a guy like Ethan Doubleair there, but him and Christian are the only guys there, really. I think Leo Chu is someone that still needs to continue to develop, and he still needs to, I'm not sure how to describe it, but he needs to really earn Brian Smetzer's trust in him to be able to not just be an attacker, but an overall presence on the field. And because of how Seattle utilizes their wingbacks, I think that there's also a need to grow depth there. We don't know what's going to happen with Nuhu in the summer window. It's one of the highlights, if you look at my computer, is one of the big
question marks for sure.
Question marks and basically highlights. I want to be following that no matter which way it goes, because, you know, there is a possibility that he goes. So with that said, and a guy like Jimmy that has been very good when he's been there, but he's been injury prone. And the question is, can he be an every game guy? And because he really hasn't answered that question, that you need to look at that position. And then Alex Roldan, he's been fantastic. He's been amazing. He's made me look brilliant because I've always had his back from day one. And even when he was cut and even with the game where everybody wanted to blame him in Columbus, he's shown up. He's an all-star. He's one of the best in his position. I still would like to see maybe a little bit of depth there behind him because he does play a lot of minutes. He does a lot in games. So having somebody else other than Kellen Rowe, if he's going to be one of the first options to substitute that holding mid position when need be, then I would like to see some more depth there. So I think that's what the team would be looking for. I think maybe if you asked me this 3 months ago, maybe four, center back would have come to question. But because of A.B. Sissoko, because of Jackson Reagan's just fantastic play over the time that he's been with the Sounders, short time, a guy that's only played USL but has looked fantastic, I think that they're solid there. There's no question marks on that. Yemar Gomez-Andrade and Javi are all locked in for quite a few years. So I think that position is locked up. So with that said, yes, I think what I just gave you, wingers and wing fullbacks would be a position that they'll be looking for in the summer.
Wingers and fullbacks. That certainly makes sense. So do you think, this is a question from the member Slack, channel253.com/membership. You can get in on that. But Craig Craker from the member Slack has a specific question about Leo Chu's future with the team. He says he can't imagine when they signed him that they'd envisioned him playing fewer minutes than Will Bruin.
They probably didn't. And there is a lot to that. You cannot just blame the guy. I think that because of how things played out when he was first signed and the switch to a three-man back line that eliminates wingers, and you need players that are very specific to that formation and whose field awareness and overall play has to be at a higher level, he was not able to fit in immediately. And Brian Smetzer is someone who, regardless of who you are and how much you're earning, you have to win yourself a spot on the team. And you have to earn it on the field as well. Mm-hmm. And in the first couple of chances that Leo got, he showed you that he needed some adapting. He needed some developing. He needed to really understand how to play defensively within his formation. And I think he's gotten better. Yeah. If you look at Leo today to when he was first signed, when he first came in, I think you see a better player. But because of that, I think that no one thought he was going to have as little impact as he's had so far. What I will say is that I'm still not ready to give up on him. I see a lot of people trashing his name and worse signing. I heard somebody call him worse than the Tomas signing from like 10 years ago. Oh, I mean,
Jaguar Bay or whatever his name
is. That's a big gut punch. That's a little far. I think that's a little bit of a stretch for a guy that hasn't had enough minutes to really show you what he can provide. And I think that he's been good. That Open Cup game here, I thought was one of the best games he's provided, regardless of him missing that PK to probably put the team through. I thought in the game, he was influential. He was dangerous. He got to that end line. So I think that there's something there. I'm not ready to give up on him. I think that with this really good coaching staff, he will grow to being a better player. And that depth, at least for the left winger position, could be there. So in terms of his future, he has a long-term contract. I don't think Seattle will get their money back for him at this particular moment.
Yeah.
Seattle doesn't just give up on guys. I remember people calling for Javier Arreaga's head in year two that he was here. And look at him now. He's developed. He's your guy. You signed him to a longer contract. So just chill, people. Give him some time, give him some room to grow. And then in 2023, we'll see where he stands. But for now, he's just another depth piece. And I think that there's potential there still.
the coaching staff is definitely much more patient than the fan base. And there's been a lot of transition, a lot of change. There's nothing, nothing we can't say more positive than that Schmetzer encourages and develops flexibility in formations. And sometimes the pieces just aren't where they need to be at the time that's going to work out. But one question that I do have is, like, when are we going to settle down and kind of figure this out? We've had a pretty that, you know, we focused pretty heavily on CCL and getting that going. And now that we're back in the run of play and we're headed into, you know, international break in a couple few weeks. And we're out of Open Cup. Don't want to talk about that. I'm a little broken up. You know, now that things are settling down, when do we expect to see some stability and predictability in results? When are these investments going to start turning into, you know, getting us above the 500 line and maybe out of 11th place? We're expecting to see that a little bit more quickly of a turnaround. What do you think about that?
I think you're already seeing it. I mean, and you will get continuity after the Vancouver game. By the Vancouver game, Tuesday the 14th, I believe, you might still have some guys out, probably Christian out and a couple of other players on international duty that might not be back. But after that, with a full team healthy, you're going to see this team just take over the same way they took over CCL. Look, I was not playing when I said this team had everything to get both titles. And I still believe that. Mm-hmm. I don't care where they are in the standings because I know the potential in this team. I asked Jordan Morris after the Charlotte win, which was a big win, by the way, even got a guy fired. But it was a big win against a very good team, very disciplined team, a group that is hard to beat no matter who they played, and they did it well. And I asked Jordan, when he looked around that locker room and the talent and the experience, you know, how comfortable was he with what he saw ahead for this team, that they were going to make it into playoff contention? And he said, I feel great. And he understood where the question was coming from. When you look around and you see a Raúl Diaz with a killer instinct, and you see a Nicolás Lodero being who he is and the fantastic player he is, and Albert Rusnak, and Yamar Gomez-Andrade, one of the best defenders in the league, you feel comfortable that you have all the tools to get up on the standings. You have, you know, games back that you still need to make up. You have a 5-game homestand. So you have everything in your power to just get up on the standing. So that's how I feel. I think that this team has everything to go on a run, that stability that you're asking for, and that focus at one tournament is going to help. And you're going to see it after the game against Vancouver. Right after that game, you're going to see this team just take over. And, you know, Brian might be like, Nico, pump your brakes, but that's how I feel. I think this team is going to dominate from after that Tuesday game. They're going to completely dominate.
We're a third of the way through the season. We've got 12 matches played, and we've got 2 games in hand against everybody ahead of us in the table, except for Real Salt Lake, against whom we have 3 games in hand. We've definitely got some opportunity, and with a 5-game homestand, you have a very strong argument there, sir.
And look, when we look at this team and what it can do and how dominant they were on CCL play, I don't know how anybody can doubt this squad. Yeah. I mean, they are as solid as they have been in years. There were times during their 2019 run and even 2016 run where you didn't really know who was going to be that back line, where you had maybe players in the midfield or at winger that you were like, oh, I'm not really sure who's going to play there. Right now, everybody's locked in Sharpie. This team is going to play with one formation and one group if you're trying to win a game. So just the fact that there is one starting 11 that you know is going to go out there and just dominate, it's an outlook to what you will see in the future for this team.
Do you compare this team, this 2022 team, to the 2016 team that was kind of on a meteoric rise to the playoffs that year? I mean, where just things are, people seem to be getting along, and things just, I don't. You were talking about the locker room in Mexico, and I was thinking, well, was it Nico Ladero like turning off the music? It's time to focus, kind of a thing, or do we have someone zooming Roman Torres just to kind of keep things light? Bring him. I mean, are there similarities? Are there differences?
Yes, there's a lot of differences. I would definitely not compare it to the 2016 team on how that team was failing early in the season, because, you know, you had to have a coaching change. There was a lot of things that were broken, if you will, that needed to be fixed, adjustments that had to be made. A Nico Ladero that gets here at the perfect time and just amplifies everybody around him and the talent that the team can have. That's not the case right now. This team just had to focus, and deservedly so, in the biggest title this league has ever had. And that's where resources went and focus went. And I don't care who you are, that's going to affect you. And you saw it happen with every MLS team that played that tournament. It affects you. And then you had to go play Open Cup. And, you know, there's so many things that are that affected this team early this year that you can't compare it. Not just the CCL things, but I mentioned this in other shows. People forget that Joe Paulo was very late to getting with the team this season because he had some migratory problems. Same thing goes for Raul Ruiz Diaz. New who ends up not even coming here. He meets the team in Honduras, I believe, because he was out in international play. So there were so many things that were just not there for this team early in the season, early in the year, that it took a little bit for it to just come together. But there's so much talent and there's so much of a good foundation that it was only a matter of time. And you saw it within the CCL tournament, and you will see it in the next third of the tournament in MLS.
Yeah. Another question from the member Slack. How are the kids faring within the team, and which kids should we keep our eye on from a scouting perspective through the rest of the season? Who's stepping up? Who else from Defiance should we be looking at for possible promotion?
Oof, that's a tough question. I don't think you will see many promotions this year. I think that they are pretty locked with what they have on the young prospects.
Okay.
But, you know, you do have a guy like Dylan Tevis that has played well when he's came on. You saw him in that U.S. Open Cup game. I think he's someone that you want to keep your eye on. But in terms of the guys that are actually going to be playing, I mean, Obed was the big name this year, right? That he was so brilliant and he was so resilient and he was so mature for a guy his age. I mean, he played a tournament that, you know, not even experienced MLS players have a easy time playing, and in venues that not many want to play in Honduras and, you know, in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Estadio León is a difficult place to play in, and he just looked to par. So, you know, he's the guy that you want to be looking at. But I also want to turn the attention on Danny Leyva. I think that people are forgetting how good Danny was, but you see it in every single training session. The guy has great vision, poise on the ball. He has a different style than Obed, mm-hmm. and he could be a really good connector. He is definitely someone that maybe doesn't have Obed's speed, but his soccer IQ and field awareness make him a very good player and someone who I think with more consistent minutes, you will see really grow within this team. So I will put my focus there in terms of the young guys that are there. In terms of promotion, I don't know if you'll see many this year.
Obed Vargas, yeah, I mean, he makes a lot of good decisions and he's got a lot of really good presence. I put him up there with Rusnak. As far Rusnak doesn't have a lot of speed, but he has a lot of good positioning, awareness, situational awareness, and being where the ball is going to be is absolutely phenomenal with Rusnak. And I put Obed in that same spot. Danny Leyva, enjoyed watching him in Tacoma when he was here, and when he was here for Defiance, and can't wait to see what else gets delivered from that kid. Timbo,
you mentioned a couple of things, basically finances, resources, and Gianpaolo and Ajao. Are we going to be able to collect half of his salary or a couple hundred grand in GAM or TAM or whatever because of his season ending injury, like we did with Morris when Morris was in England?
Oof. You know what? I thought that because the injury happened after that transfer window closed, that was not going to be a possibility. I don't know if now that it reopens, if that is something that they can do. I honestly don't have an answer for that. All I know is that when it happened and when it passed, it was already too late to get any sort of compensation because gotcha. That first window had closed. So I'm not really sure if that is something that they'll be able to do at this particular time.
And with the emergence of Vargas, Leyva, and Atencio all kind of in that same general CDM spot, that's not an area that we're probably going to be shopping for. You said maybe a left back or a winger. Is that?
Yeah.
If any holes or depth need to be produced, it's going to be in those situations.
I think so, man. And look, Christian has been fantastic at winger, and he's been so effective, and he's so smart, and he probably gives you twice the effort that, you know, half of the guys in this league can provide you. I mean, I've always said that I feel like he has a V8 engine on like this, you know, small Honda frame. I mean, it's incredible what he can do, but I do want to have some depth for a guy that plays as many minutes as he does and who leaves it all out on the field the way he does. And someone that, as I mentioned earlier in the show, could be a really good, solid holding midfielder right next to Albert Rusnak. I mean, if I need to, I don't know, protect myself and I need to have a guy that's rangier and can do different things in that position, I would not doubt to put him there. However, the Sounders have done a lot of things with that other guy next to Albert, to the point that we even saw Nico draw back a line in that Charlotte game, and then you put Freddie to kind of be that 10. So they see things differently perhaps, but to me, Christian is still a guy that can just own that spot. So I would like to see depth at winger and having someone that's different. I mean, there's a lot of things that Christian does well, but maybe if you have someone that could play that position differently, gives you other options. So maybe a very speedy front-line attacker, someone that is a top goal scorer that can just do things a little bit different. I would like to see that. And then in the wingback stuff, I definitely see a big need of depth there.
I think getting Leo Chu, If you need to get him up on whatever that car computer, the Dyna, whatever it's called, to get him up on the rack and change his defensive chip and maybe swap out an offensive scoring chip, he should be fine. I don't know what I'm screwing up here, but there's a term where they get to find out what your horsepower is and you get your wheel spinning, so we'll cut that out. I'm a fucking idiot. I'm sorry.
Well, if Leo could, I mean, he can be a goal scorer. He just needs to make some better decisions on those second touches in that final third, right? I mean, he needs to know where his target guys are and not necessarily take those shots himself from 32 yards out.
I'm assuming that he'll see more playing time if he plays a little bit more defense.
A little more focus. Some awareness, yeah.
Is probably the way I'm reading the cards is Schmetz basically says, you got to play defense or you're not getting on the field.
Yeah, and I think you'll see that. Once again, I think people are trying to punch out his card a little early.
Oh.
And the guy's talented. You can't deny it. You know. He's definitely good on the one-on-one. He can get to the end line. The decision-making need to be better? Absolutely. Yep. Does his service need to improve? No doubt about it. But does he have the components to be a good player in this league? Absolutely. So I don't think you're losing money there. He's a guy that's going to grow up to be a better player. And I think it's a win-win for everybody, both for the player and for the team. You just got to give it time.
So how soon until we're looking at Club World Cup? Do we have any kind of any scuttlebutt on when that's actually going to happen, where it's going to be played, anything like that? Or are we still kind of hemming and hawing and trying to figure out what it looks like globally?
Yeah, no, we're just still in the waiting game on that one. I think even the team has not commented a lot about where they're going to play or anything like that. I am asking players, and I will, you know, have some statements on, you know, what it feels like, how it felt for them to have watched the European Champions League played out, and knowing that Real Madrid, you know, won, and you might see them, you know, in this World Cup, and how that makes them feel. But when it comes to the logistics and how everything's going to play out, I think we're still doing the waiting game on that.
So what other projects are you working on right now? You got any big pieces coming out?
I do. I got a few. The only one that I'm going to kind of present, because it's close to conclusion. I am well known for pushing that end line or the deadline, pushing it a little bit, because I take my time when it comes to big stories. But I'm working on a real good one with Yemer Gomez-Andrade. He's such a huge talent. He is someone that, in my opinion, has taken the league by storm. He's been talked about defensive player of the year from the moment he stepped a field in MLS. He's been so consistent and so dominant that I don't think we've seen that sort of center back since Chad Marshall. And look, Roman was great. He was very good, but I don't think he was a guy that when you heard people talk about him nationally, they would say, man, he's an all-star. He's someone that it's amazing. Yemer not only got an all-star game already under his belt, he also got his top call-up with the Colombia national team. So because he's such a interesting talent, I've done a little bit of a really good story on him getting a brand new contract that doubled up his salary to what he first came here earning, and that will lock him in through about 2026 with some club options. So because of that, I've done my research and talked to him about what he's feeling, that sort of trust that the club has provided him with extending his contract. And for someone who, as every other player, you know, dreams of getting to Europe, maybe this is the top of his career. Maybe his legacy is being one of the best to ever play in MLS at the center back position. I'm not saying that's the case now. I'm just saying that if that was the case, you know, how interesting would that be for him if that was the case, right? Every player dreams of making it to Europe and being a legend in Europe, but with his talent and what he's done so far, he could be a great in this league. So I talked to him a little bit about that specific aspect, you know, what is going to be like for someone like him that has played in a Argentine league that's so well regarded around the world, but that after coming to MLS, he's had his first ever title. He's never won a title. He's played several finals in his career, never won one. He got that chance here. He's won his first international title here. And now he gets to play against the best in the planet because of MLS. So I talked to him a little bit about that journey and the way things are playing out for him. So I hope you guys will check it out at Sounder on Hard. Hopefully by the end of the week, we'll pop that out there.
Fantastic. Is that going to be English language, Spanish language, or both?
No, it's going to be English for sure. Yeah. Okay. I want to make sure that this fantastic fan base that is always so caring about the team, that is constantly, you know, messaging me and wondering about guys, they get a little bit of that, because there's nothing quite like bringing those types of stories so people get to know the man aside from the soccer player.
I'm glad that he's able to, you know, that the Colombian coach rates MLS. I think, well, shoot, during the last coach, Peckerman didn't rate MLS at all, and Freddie never really got a sniff on the national team with the Colombian national team. But I'm glad we're getting some eyeballs and people are getting some caps. In order to compare him to Chad Marshall, I think the guys should have a conversation, because he's going to have to do a lot more BS in the locker room, like try on Stephen Fry's clothes and walk around naked, apparently, and tell lots of jokes. I think that's what that's also stuff that you can get from Marshall.
Well, maybe in the locker room, he might have to do a little bit more of that. He's a very interesting persona because he does remind me of Chad in that regard, where
dry sense of humor.
Yeah, well, he's got a little bit of the dry humor, but you know, when Chad was with us, the media members, he was never as open as what you would hear he was in the locker room. And I think Yammer's a little bit like that, because he can be short, he can be very to the point when it comes to your answers. When you're doing like a media thing, it takes a little bit for him to open up. And I think Chad was a little bit like that with us. And then when he was in the locker room, he was fun. He was this other guy, or that's the way I remember him. So, you know, maybe Yammer has a little bit of that, because he is someone that's very well liked in the locker room. He does get along with everyone. He does like to, you know, dance and get all, you know, in good with the team. So yeah, that's a good little comparison there.
Oh, I love this, because we don't get that stuff. I mean, watching him play, he smiles once in a while, like especially if he just cleans somebody's clock, but he doesn't really talk. I don't know if it's maybe just a Spanish to English thing. Maybe he's not super comfortable with English, but yeah, he doesn't look like, I don't see him on camera very often, you know, talking to anybody.
No, I mean, he definitely talks it. He extends himself a lot more in Spanish, but I got to tell you, he's not the most expressive guy. Yeah. You know, he's not someone that's just going to, he's no Christian Roldan, or he's no Brad Evans. He's just, he's someone who does try to talk to you, but I don't think he is as comfortable as others are in front of the mics.
All right. So no open mic night then, is what you're saying. Oh, one more thing. I know I'm always steering this thing off course. Are there any chances with the weird setup for the World Cup this year? Are there any chances we get a loan from a player that just wants to stay fresh going into, you know, going through the summer into the fall and going into the winter for the World Cup? I think several years ago, the Brazilian national team keeper Cesar, I think, played for Toronto because he wanted to play right up into the World Cup. Is there a situation that would represent itself like that, where you'd see players coming over from Europe or from other leagues just to hang out with us for 3 or 4 months to stay fresh, you know, from one transfer window to another?
I don't think this year, especially the way MLS is set up for this specific World Cup, there's actually a 2 month period or something that if you don't make the playoffs in MLS, you're just going to be sitting at home. I asked Shakiri about it when he was first signed into Chicago Fire, and he kind of mentioned that he realizes that that's a possibility, and you know, there's things that he's going to have to do to stay in shape for that World Cup games, because if Chicago, which very likely might not make playoffs, with a friend Ezra Henderson over there, he might not make it. So I don't think you'll see many players that are trying to stay fit or trying to, you know, for that specific purpose that you're talking about, you won't see that happen. There's, of course, a trend in MLS of bringing in guys that are part of it, of national teams, right? I mean, you see it right now with Busca and Sadersky and, you know, every Ecuadorian guy you could think of, Palacios and Estrada and Javier Arriaga. There's Cifuentes, you know. So I think there is a trend in MLS of bringing guys who are part of national teams. But for your question specifically, no, that you won't see that happen.
Steve, do we have any more questions from our 253 listeners?
The last one we have is, again, from Craig Craker. Do you think MLS free agency will continue to grow? And, you know, we'll all look back on the Rusnak signing as a bargain or a tide-changing type of acquisition.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this Albert Rusnak move has been so effective for the Sounders that you will see a lot of teams trying to do maybe more domestic moves. A guy like, for me, Eddie Segura is a guy that, you know, now with this whole Chiellini thing to LAFC, which to me is preposterous, and I hate it so much. And I can't wait for me to be able to ask questions about it to a organization that has that is trying to set us back years in MLS. A guy like Eddie Segura, if Chiellini's coming, he could be a guy that maybe guys teams will be looking around the league. If you need a center back, why not? So yes, I think you will see more domestic moves done throughout MLS. It is another trend that's starting to pick up, as well as recycling guys that have been in the league and gone abroad and now are coming back, like Savarino going back to RSL after having a spell out in South America. And now the rumors of Mario Manotas possibly coming back to MLS as well. MLS is a league that does keep track on their guys. And if they're unhappy or if they're not succeeding the way they would, there's always going to be a reach out to them. So that's something else that we could potentially see in this summer window is guys who have left and are not playing enough minutes to come back to the league.
Where else can we find your writing besides Sounder at Heart?
Well, if you're speaking English, that's probably the only way that, that you're going to find my work. Obviously in Spanish, Pulso Sports, as well as MLS in Spanish. We're doing a lot of work with our YouTube channel, where I do try to have a lot of bilingual work. So your best bet at a lot of good content in English, from me specifically, if you want that pain, is at Pulso Sports channel on YouTube. We will have not just interviews with Sounders, but we also have guys around the league. It is my intent to go with more of an English crowd for this second part of the season. We typically have a lot of Spanish speakers, mm-hmm. but I do want to get a couple of very good interviews in English for this following part of MLS season.
Well, fantastic. We'll have links to all of those in the show notes as well. Lots of ways to get a hold of Nico Moreno and get his great content. Really appreciate you being on the show again, sir. And definitely look out for his piece coming out this Friday on Yemar Gomez Andrade on Friday or so. Keep an eye at Sounder at Heart. Once again, thank you very much for listening to the Flounders B Team podcast. Flounders B Team is a member of the Channel 253 podcast network. You can join, become a member for all kinds of member benefits, including that member Slack we were talking about, special events, secret podcasts, all kinds of good stuff. If you just go to channel253.com/membership, $4 a month or $40 a year, and you can be a part of a growing and dynamic community. We're adding new podcasts all the time and just really can't wait to see you there. Thank you for listening. And once again, I'm Steve Kettleson.
I'm Tim Hamilton. And our special guest today is
Nico Moreno.
Yeah, let's go. Thank you so much for listening to the Flounders B Team podcast, and we are out of here.
This is Channel 253.
Chassis dynamometer. Dynamometer.
Chassis dynamometer. Chassis dynamometer.
That's the word I was looking up and I screwed up. Chassis dyno. You put your car on it, it simulates the road where you spin the deals. It's basically like a treadmill for your car. Okay.
Okay. Excellent.
Do the best you can with that one.